Hi, Damien and Marcus from 100 Not Out here. MP.
Yes, Damo.
We all know the importance of having a diary, but who wants a boring old day planner?
Not me.
Enter the journey of me.
Ta-da!
The incredible 8-month wellness journal designed especially for wellness peeps like you.
Yes, Damo, this beautiful 8-month wellness guide is filled with questions, planners, exercises, reflective notes, and more. Endorsed by the Up For A Chat girls and loved the world over, the journey of me is a must-have if you're ready to live your best life for life.
To purchase your very own journey of me and receive a free set of inspirational postcards, simply enter the code COUCH at www.wellinu.com. That's www.wellinux.com.
WellnessCouch.com, streaming wellness into your life.
Welcome, everybody, and thanks for tuning in. You've joined us here, right here on Karen's Couch this week. Now, this week, it's going to be you and me again, and I want to share something with you that I delivered at a presentation a couple of weeks ago, and it was all about the nature of well-being. And I really want to take you down the rabbit hole a little bit, but more than anything, I really want you to start to think about your own life and how what I'm about to share applies to you and also applies to people that you know. Because hopefully out of today's podcast, you might have some tools that you can not only help yourself, but potentially be able to support others in your lives where you see that perhaps they're struggling or they're not really finding their way to that sense of feeling peace and happiness and bliss. You know, for the most part, it really does elude most of us. And it's a pretty tragic way that life has unfolded. You know, you think about it, 100 years ago, we went in search of water. And now we go in search of Wi-Fi. Things have really changed. And what we're doing in search of our happiness and in search of our sense of well-being, we are tearing the planet apart. While we're looking for well-being, we are tearing this planet apart. Let's have a look at this for a quick second. As a generation, we are the most comfortable for many, many generations. Not many people. I mean, obviously there is those that are poverty stricken, and there are those parts of the planet that are still going hungry. And, you know, I think it's unforgivable, quite frankly. That's another show. But when we think about it in general, for the most part, we can afford to at least have bread and baked beans on our tables each night. We can afford to at least have a banana or an apple or to be able to feed ourselves and to earn some kind of a living. For the most part, we're a generation that is the most comfortable in comparison to previous generations that really struggled. But when it comes to well-being, we are no further ahead. We are no further ahead. In fact, I would go as far as to say we have slipped backwards because we are tearing this planet apart looking for well-being, looking for joy, looking for bliss. We're looking for it in our food. We are looking for it in our relationships. We're looking for it in our work and in our business. We're looking for it in our children. We're looking for it in our car, our home, and our bank account. We are looking for our well-being in all of these places where well-being does not exist. And you know, the part that really floors me is that we have been looking in those directions for eons and we are not getting the hint. We're not getting any closer to well-being. In fact, we're getting further and further away from it. We're becoming more and more disconnected from what well-being actually is. We have no idea of who we are, the level of self-doubt that infiltrates every cell of every body is insane. We don't trust ourselves, we question ourselves, and we therefore trust the opinion of others. No wonder we are so confused when it comes to our psychological well-being and our physical well-being. Isn't it obvious when we actually look at where we've come from and where we're going? Isn't it obvious that if we keep doing the same things, we are going to keep repeating the same mistakes. And if we keep looking for well-being in a place that it doesn't exist, it does not exist in a bank account. It does not exist in a relationship. Well-being does not exist in food. Food is not the enemy. Food is not the problem. We make it the problem with all of our emotional and psychological drama. But food in and of itself is benign. It's just an apple. It's just a banana. It's just a steak. It's just food. Yet we give it all of this meaning and all of this great weight and all of these great stories. And of course, there's going to be created disease and there's going to be created allergies and food intolerances and bodies that can't cope in this world. But the bodies that can't cope in this world are not just not coping with food. They're not coping in other areas. And it all shows up in the same way. If we're not coping with our food, trust me, we are not coping with our love. We're not coping with our relationships. We're not coping with our self-doubt. We're not coping with our own self-love and acceptance. We are not coping with our work. We are not coping with our finances. How we do one thing shows up everywhere. You know, when we think about it also beyond ourselves, you look at the world, the wars, the war that is caused throughout this planet over and over and over again. Now, when we go a little bit deeper, we see that there are great political agendas attached to that, where it's this person wanting to make more money out of the defense forces because that's where the greatest amount of money gets spent and this person's got shares in it. That person has a fight with another person and it all escalates and now everybody's at war and those in certain places are making a lot of money out of it. We can go to that level. And I suggest if that sort of thing interests you, then do the research. But at the bottom line, at the very bottom of the rung is the soldier who is going out and killing another human being for a cause that he may understand, but it's not his cause. It's not his fight. But yes, he will go and kill somebody for it. Can you imagine if you have had people who've been to war or you know people who've been to war? You know, you think about our beautiful soldiers that come back from the work that they've done and their psychological trauma that they are put under is enormous. It's immense. And still, we keep doing it. We keep sending our people to fight for us, looking for this ultimate well-being. If we conquer this one, we'll be okay. If we conquer that one, we'll be okay. If we fight for our land, we'll be okay. If we do this, we'll be okay. Looking for this well-being. But the basic human nature is not to take another human's life. It is not to remove life. In fact, it's quite the opposite. The basic of human nature is to create life. Be life. So when we send our people off to war, it's no surprise that they come back with a relative brokenness because they've been acting in direct contrary to what is their innate intelligence of life. And they're putting their own lives in danger, no question about that. And that in and of itself flies in the face of the human instinct for survival. Look at the way that we treat our animals, the custodians of this planet. Tell me you don't see great cruelty. I saw on Facebook a couple of weeks ago that in Idaho, in the United States, they have removed the ag gag law. Now, this is really interesting to me because in the agricultural industry, there has actually been a law in place that's a gag law, stopping anybody who works in that industry talking about the treatment of animals, stopping them from talking about the way that they treat them, slaughter them, manage them, and how they're housed, how they're fed, all those sorts of things. There's been a law against it. That's why cameras have had to sneak in covertly to go and get footage to show us exactly what's happening in our agricultural industry. It is disgusting. It is absolutely disgusting. But you know what I find curious to me is the way that we treat ourselves and the way that we treat each other is the way that we treat our animals. We rape each other, we rape our animals, or we have our animals raped. We trap each other, We trap ourselves, we trap our animals. If you've ever seen a piggery, then you'll know what I'm talking about. We devastate and destroy each other. Go to a dairy farm and go and see that the baby calves are removed within a day of the mother giving birth. Then watch the mother. You want to see pain and suffering? You'll see pain and suffering right there. I'm not saying all of this because I'm saying everybody should be a raw vegan. That's not why I'm saying it. What I'm saying is to bring attention to the fact that the way that we treat ourselves and the way that we treat each other is the way that we are treating our animals. We are doing it in every area of life. We are tearing this planet apart systematically, looking for this ultimate holy grail of well-being. And everybody is suffering, and it's exaggerating. It's not diminishing. This great ferocious search of well-being, you'd think with so much energy focus in one direction, that we would actually find this sensation of well-being, but it's not there. In fact, it's becoming more and more elusive. And we're living in a planet where the damage is becoming so extreme, it will eventually become irreparable. Why do you think they're off looking for new planets for us to go and inhabit where we can destroy those too? You know, man in and of itself in its search for progress is the most powerful, innovative, incredible gift that we have is our ability to think as a sentient being. But what we're not thinking about is the destruction and the suffering that's being caused along the way and what the actual root cause of that is. Look at the way that we treat ourselves. Come back to step one. Who is the perpetrator of the suffering? Man. Where do they do that first? Where do they start that suffering? They start it with themselves. And none of us are any different. We may not be the person out at the abattoir. We may not be the person out to war. That doesn't matter. We're still doing it to ourselves. We are systematically tearing ourselves apart, looking for this elusive well-being. And of course, then that transcends out to the planet. You know, you look at the way that we have tried to find ways to subdue our pain and subdue our suffering. We have turned to addictions of substances, alcohol, food, sugar, overeating. We're looking for ways to numb down and dumb down our sensations that are painful to us on a day-to-day basis. And every human being is experiencing it. You know, we technically, when you think about life, life is for living, life is for bliss, life is for enjoyment. We were not put here to suffer. We were put here to experience texture and joy. But how many times a day, ask yourself this, how many times a day do you hit bliss? How many times a day do you hit ecstasy? I mean, how many times a month do you hit ecstasy? And I'm not just talking about in the bedroom, people. What I'm talking about is ecstasy inside of yourself in terms of absolute elation. How many times a day do you hit that? Or how many times a day do you hit disappointment, negativity, disconnection, disillusionment? How many times a day? If you could keep a track of it, I think that would be a really interesting journal to watch. Our psychological drama that we have been creating over all these years has generated millions and millions and millions of dollars of people looking for well-being. Look at it. Think about it. The health industry has absolutely exploded, hasn't it? It's because we're in desperate search of this well-being and supplements, foods, personal trainers, all of that sort of stuff. It's just gone through the roof because that's where we're spending our money now in search of this well-being. But collectively, we're still not finding it. It's still not there. You only have to turn the news on to see what's happening in other countries. You've only got to look in the newspapers. You know, it's so devastating to me now that I actually can't watch the news. I can't turn it on in the morning and I can't watch it in the evenings. It's too much. There's no light. It's just this person was murdered. That person was decapitated. This person was killed. This person was robbed. That person was bashed. This person died. It's just constant barrage of the pain and the suffering. And already in and amongst all of the people that live in this world, the billions of people who live in this world, on average, 1 million people won't wake up tomorrow. On average, 1 million people won't wake up tomorrow. Now, that means that if there are 10 people, let's say, that care about that, one of those 1 million people, potentially there are 10 million people whose lives will be dramatically altered tomorrow morning. We just have to be grateful if we wake up. We just have to be grateful if we get to experience joy and bliss, because you can think that it won't happen to us, and that's a great way to think. But unfortunately, when we lose sight of our mortality, we also lose sight of our gratitude. We also lose sight of our ferocious pursuit for bliss, our ferocious pursuit for ecstasy. And we also lose sight of where to find it and where it lives. And I think that what lands up happening is we allow life to take over, and life becomes quite random. People come and go, experiences occur, and we have a world of meaning around every experience. You're even making meaning on what I'm saying right now. So we have this world of meaning that we apply to everything. Is she right? Is she wrong? Let me have a look inside myself and see if that's right. Let me see if I know anybody that applies meaning to anything. Let me see if I am guilty of the same thing. Is she right? Is she wrong? We're applying meaning to absolutely everything that we do. We're meaning-making machines, and we start doing it from the time that we're wee little people. You know, when we don't understand what's happening to us, when it's our very first experience of something, we apply meaning to it in order to make it make sense to us. And we start doing that from when we're kids. You know, your first experience of an apple, what did that mean to you? Well, it meant that it was sweet and it was crunchy, or it was bitter and it was sour and I didn't like it and I didn't like the texture. So we gave an apple meaning. It was either sweet and tasty, or it was bitter and a bad texture. But an apple is just an apple. It doesn't have any meaning unless we give it one. So as little people, we start applying meaning to our first experiences of everything. The first time that we touch sand, what does that mean? The first time that we feel the sun on our face, what does that mean? The first time we feel cold air on our skin, what does that mean? The first time that we feel a hug, what does that mean? The first time that we hear the words no, what does that mean? And it's not just what does that mean, it's what does that mean about me? Think about that. The first time we get a hug, it means I am loved. The first time I hear no, it means I am not enough. I've just been rejected. And then life continues to unfold, and we continue to apply those same meanings to more and more experiences, and then our experiences all kind of look the same. You know, you get to a certain age in your life where you look back and you go, wow, you know, it just feels like it's the same thing all the time. Like, it just feels like it's not, there's nothing different. I mean, yeah, the circumstances might be different, but geez, I just want like a whole new experience around money. Or I just want a really different experiences around relationships. But the challenge that you're faced with is that you are the center of all of your experiences, yet your experiences are dragging around the frame of reference that you've created for yourself from the time that you were three. And it leaves us quite limited, don't you think? So let's look at what we can do. Let's look at what we can start to create for ourselves that can potentially give us a different experience, give us a different perspective, make life new as of tomorrow. Because you just don't know if tomorrow is the last day. So why not live like it is and hit ecstasy, hit bliss 6-7 times in the day? Go for it. Don't settle for a life that is anything less than that. And it's only, the only things that are making your life less than that is your story. It's the meaning that you're giving to your experiences that you've been carrying around for years. Let me show you. Like, we're a generation that's suffering. We've explained that. But, you know, there's two types of suffering. There's two kinds of causes, actually. There's two causes of suffering. There's internal and external. External is where it's inflicted upon you. Let's take my story, for example. I was in the Bali bombing. And that wasn't my fault. I didn't do it. Was I part of it? Yes. Was I there? Yes. Did some people that I love dearly pass away? Absolutely. No mistake about that. Those things absolutely happened. Internal forces is where we do it to ourselves. And that comes from our meaning. It comes from our story. It comes from our explanation of a particular experience so that it can make sense for us. But the tragedy in that, and I'm no different to anybody else, it's just that I've learned a little bit of something about this. The tragedy in us applying a meaning and a story to our experiences is that we don't get to live beyond that story. So here's what I mean. When I went through the bombing, the Bali bombing, and my partner committed suicide, I gave that a lot of meaning about me and who I was, and my identity changed. I became a survivor of the Bali bombing. I became somebody who had a partner that committed suicide. I was somebody who was devastatingly depressed. I was somebody who believed that I didn't deserve love. I didn't deserve to be here. And I was the most abhorrent creature walking. And so all of my experiences showed me that that was true. And I was destined for a life of suffering. And when I got blown up in Bali, it was more confirmation that I would spend the rest of my day suffering because I deserved it. You know, I could have been taken in Bali and had all my pain end, but no, not me. I was the one who had to survive. Now I've got to suck it up and suffer for the rest of my life, and I deserve it. And that was the meaning that I'd given to that experience of the Bali bombing after Greg's suicide. But I read something really beautiful not so long ago, and it was a statement made by Buddha. And he said, pain occurs in the instant, but suffering is our will to hold on to it. Just think about that for a second. Pain occurs in the instant, but our suffering is our will to hold on to it. So the bombing occurred in the instant. Was I actually in any physical pain during the bombing? The truth? No, none, none whatsoever. I wasn't frightened. I wasn't scared. I wasn't in any pain. In fact, I was directly the opposite. I was my most lucid, my most powerful. I felt I was in complete and utter control. And if you look in your own experiences, be it a divorce or a bankruptcy, no matter what it is, at the time, in the moment, in the instances that it is occurring, you are coping. You step up and you cope, and you do what you need to do to get through those moments. You have always done that. So the interesting thing about this is that in the moment that our most devastating experiences are occurring, or we believe devastating, the moment that our most challenging experiences are occurring, we are at our most powerful. We are not at our most vulnerable like we like to think we are when we revisit the experience after the fact. And when we revisit the experience after the fact, that's when we apply story. That's when we apply meaning to it, because now we're trying to make sense of everything that's occurred, as opposed to just leaving it as an experience that we powerfully conquered in the moment. Whether we won the court case or whatever is irrelevant. When I say powerfully conquered, I mean you survived it. You lived to tell the tale. You went through it. You got through it. But instead of getting the learning that was there for you that would have you become this extraordinary powerhouse, instead of that, we get a meaning that has us become diminished. We apply pain, suffering, sadness, negativity. We apply all of these experiences, all of these emotions and all of this psychological drama to our experiences, which then renders them irrelevant until we get the gift out of them. And I just want to say to everybody, you know, we all have the invitation, no matter what is occurring, whether it's a stubbed toe or a car accident, we can all be on bended knee for 6 minutes, or we can be on bended knee for 6 weeks, 6 months, or 6 years. That's entirely up to us. But I want to say life was not meant to be destructive of human nature. Life is meant to generate life. Life is meant to be creative of life. And when we're not doing that, we're not living. When we're not in that state of creativity, we're not alive. You know, we're not alive. And we can do better. You know, we can do better than just going for peace. We can do better than saying, I just want to have peace around this. We can actually do better than that. Because here's a funny thing I heard the other day. If what we're searching for is just peace around our money, just peace around our traumas, just peace around the challenges, I just want peace of mind. If that's all that it is, all you're going to land up doing is resting in peace. And I thought that was really hilarious because it's so true. How many people do you see that are alive but are resting in peace? Really? Life is about texture. Life is about contrast. Life is about the great wake-up calls, the great epiphanies, the ultimate experiences, the great highs, the great lows, the great flavor, the great texture. That is living. You know you're alive when you feel and you participate and you are involved. But the problem that we have is we don't know who we are. We think that we are these mediocre, weak little creatures that are at the random effect of life's experiences, the relationships that we have. We think we have no say. We think we have no control. And then we go read an empowerment book of self-help, and then we go and listen to a presentation from somebody, and then we think to ourselves, okay, well, I can do this. I'm going to take back my control. I can do it. I can do it. But that's not what we're talking about. It's not about talking yourself into your empowerment. It's actually about looking inside to the depths of you, figuring out who you are, and not through your identity of who you are, that you're a mother, a daughter, a sister, an auntie, an uncle, a brother, a son, a Bali bombing survivor, an accountant, a bookkeeper. No, it's not that. Not through your identity. Those are just labels. And as soon as you label yourself, you stop seeing yourself. You are way more than any of those things, singularly or collectively. But until we can take our attention from the external seeking of well-being and bring our attention inside to the internal seeking of well-being, we will never find well-being. And we will never learn to trust ourselves. We will never overcome that self-doubt that has most humans by the throat. We will never overcome our inability to function complete, whole, and magically in relationships. We will never find the bliss point when it comes to our finances and the experiences that we create in our lives. See, what we think about determines how we feel. And then that determines the way that we act and the way that we behave. So if what you're thinking about is, I'm a mum, I have to do these responsibilities. I'm a dentist, I've got to go to work. I'm a brother, I've got these responsibilities in the family. I am this, I am that, I am this, I am that. Our identity is determining the way that we think. And then that's all that you think about. And all the experiences that you get, therefore all of the emotions that you experience. But do you think that there's more to life than just that? There is so much more to life than the limited view through your identity. If you were to take away the labels of everything that you are, take away absolutely everything. If you were then to also sit in a chair, take away all of your self-doubt, all of the chatter that goes on between your two ears, take it out of your head and just pop it on the chair next to you. All of the talk, all of the chatter. And granted, I am chatting in your head right now. I get that. But when the podcast is over, take all of that noise, all of the chatter, all the questioning, all the should I, shouldn't I, will I, won't I, can I, can't I, won't, none of that. Take all of that and put it on the chair next to you just for 5 seconds. That's all. What you'll find is what's left is a profound sense of quietness inside of yourself. Some of you might be able to do this now while you're on the show with me, but there's a profound sense of quiet that goes on between your two ears, and that is actually who you are. That sensation of quietness, of just no thing, that's who you are. With no referencing the past, no referencing the future, no thinking about any of those things, no worrying about this afternoon, no worrying about yesterday, no worrying about any of that. Just take all that, put it on the chair next to you. What's left is this sensation of no thingness, nothing. And that's the foundation from where you have the opportunity to go out and participate in life. And the more you practice this exercise of emptying out your head and popping it all on the chair next to you, the longer you'll be able to hold that sensation of nothingness. Now, that nothingness doesn't mean that you are nothing. It just means you've cleared the pipes. You've gotten rid of all of the junk that constantly circulates between your two ears. All of the words, all the language, all the story, all the meaning, all the past and the present and the future and all of that stuff, you've gotten rid of all of that and you've popped it on the chair next to you. Now, from the platform of nothing, you can create everything and anything. But now it comes from a place of choice. And when we do things from that place of choice, we then have the opportunity to experience more bliss because I am choosing to make my son's bed. I am choosing to do the washing. I am choosing to vacuum. It's a very different platform to come from, and you cannot talk yourself into that. Positive self-talk cannot talk you into that. The only way to that platform of nothingness where everything becomes possible is to be able to empty out all of the thought and all of the circular thinking. You know, 90%, science has proven that 90% of the thoughts that occur between your two ears on a day-to-day basis are a repeat of what you thought yesterday. And the other 10% are what you thought last week, last month, last year. So your thinking holds nothing new for you. It doesn't work that way. Thinking and creativity work in different parts of the brain. So isn't that interesting? We put so much energy into celebrating our intellect, yet it's our very intellect that stands in our way of creating exceptional experiences, exceptional lives. It's our thinking that stands in the way of it, and it's that simple. It's that simple. You know, in Eastern philosophy, they talk about the mind in a very different way to what we do. And here in Western culture, we really do celebrate our intellect. We really do celebrate our ability to think and our ability to make meaning and our ability to dissect and analyze. We really celebrate that. I mean, you look at the people who are held with the most esteem are our scientists, our mathematicians, our doctors. You know, in society, they are the ones who we have the most respect for. And, well, for the most part. But we really do celebrate our intellect. And in Eastern philosophy, they divide the mind into 84,000 parts, a little too much to digest. So they've actually brought it back down to four, which is really simple. And the first is our intellect. But they say that the intellect is the part of the mind that does the dissecting, does the analyzing, pulling it apart, figuring it out. And when you actually have a look inside, that's quite true. That's what your thinking does. It's should I, shouldn't I, will I, won't I, can I, can't I, can I, would I, is it, isn't it, was she, did she, has she? No, she didn't. It's the dissecting and the trying to make logical sense of it. But the intellect can only draw on its previous frames of reference and its previous meanings that it's given. So it doesn't have a frame of reference outside of its own. Now, it can reshape, reconfigure, reconstruct, but it can't create something from nothing. It can't create a new thought. So the intellect is like a scalpel, they say. It's like the sharpest, sharpest scalpel. It's like you take that frog when you're in science, when you're at school, you take that frog and you dissect the frog and you learn so much about the frog through that dissection process. But you don't learn about life through dissection because life cannot be broken up. See, once you dissected that frog, he was dead. So you didn't actually, you didn't learn what life was. You didn't learn what it was that was beating his heart, what it was that was breathing him. you didn't learn what gave him his instinct, what made him want to eat flies as opposed to eating grass. You didn't learn that. The other part of the brain, they say, is our identity. And the identity, if you like to picture it, is the hand that holds the scalpel. So for the most part, in Western culture, we only recognize ourselves as the identity and our intellect. I am a speaker, and then I have my intellect around that and my ability to draw on what I've learned and what I've studied and what I've read. And that becomes my life. So, of course, that then limits the level of experiences that I can have. I don't have the experience of being a mum, but is that an experience? Yeah. Somebody else who's a mum that isn't a speaker, they don't have the experience of being a speaker, but is that an option? Well, yeah. See, everything is available to us, but through our identities, we pinch off the flow of life. We pinch off what's possible for us. And because we're living trapped, and we all at some point in our lives have felt trapped inside of our lives, and we live inside of these lives, and it's painful because we have a hand that's unsteady holding a scalpel that's cutting ourselves to pieces. So we numb ourselves down with addictions and overeating and abuse and overwork, and we're looking for this well-being. We just go in ferocious pursuit of it because instinctively and innately inside of this skin that we're in, for the most part, we are in pain, we're suffering, and we are doing it to ourselves. We are doing it to ourselves. The other part of the brain that the Eastern philosophy talks about is memory. And this part I really love, and you've heard me say this on the Karen's Couch before, is that we have our mental memory, our psychological memory, which is awesome. But the body is so much bigger in terms of memory. And then there's the body outside of the body. You know, like if you walk up next to somebody, you can kind of feel heat from them, even though you're not touching them. So that's kind of like the external energy that occurs outside of the body. And it's huge. So we're not going to go into that too much, but it's a massive, massive part of the consciousness that we are. And Eastern philosophy says that, you know, you don't remember your grandmother generation after generation after generation, 10 generations back. You don't remember what she looked like, yet her nose is on your face and your body remembers her, and your personality and your cells remember her, your DNA remembers her. And you couldn't remember somebody that was 50 generations ago or 100 generations ago, yet you have their big toe. So interestingly enough, our memory goes way beyond what we think memory actually is. And the memory that we do hold is memory driven. Ready for it? The memory that we do hold and celebrate and accept as true, right, and real are memories that were created through an experience which occurred. We then dissected it through our intellect. Through that dissection process, we found what that experience meant based on previous experience, and this was happening unconsciously and potentially consciously. But we went through that experience and we looked back through our filing cabinet and went, right, this feels like that. Therefore, this means the same as that, and I will then have the same emotional response. And as soon as we apply an emotional response, we create a memory. Now, if there are no emotional responses, we don't create the memory so much, certainly not long-term. So we're giving meaning to all of our experiences, and that's what creates meaning and makes them memorable. And then we go to war for what we think is true, right, and real. But think about this for a second. Our memories are flawed. The memory that we relate to, it's flawed. You can't remember what you ate for breakfast a week ago. What makes you think you can remember every detail of a conversation you had with your father when you were 16? You don't. And you don't know what was there from his point of view and his perspective. We can't know. But yet we relate to our experiences like they are the truth. And they're not the truth. They're just the meaning that we ascribed in the moment. And in that meaning, we've then created an identity which keeps us trapped in a life that could look so differently, but because of the way that we relate to ourselves, we are cutting ourselves with a sharp scalpel left, right, and center. It's no wonder we are suffering as much as we are, causing suffering to ourselves, causing suffering to each other, and tearing this planet apart systematically. Can you see the simplicity of where it starts? Can you see how quickly and how easily this can be undone? Simply by everybody being willing to just bring themselves back to base camp, meaning take all of the thinking and all of the thoughts and all of the experiences and all of the drama and all the past, present, and future and put it on the chair next to you. Bring yourself back to a zero platform. And from that zero platform, go out into life and observe, watch life, be involved with life, feel the texture of life, feel the emotions, but don't be attached to them. And don't expect that they should be a certain way or another certain way. Don't give anything any meaning. Try it for the day. Don't give anything any meaning today. Just empty your head, pop it on the chair. You've got nothing to lose. You can always pick up all that drama again anytime you want to. But for now, just pop it on the chair and then go into your life. Go and cook dinner. Go and play netball. Go to yoga. Go and do whatever it is that you normally do. But go and do it from that platform of continually emptying your head. Every time thoughts come in, empty your head. Just pop it on the chair next to you, no matter where you are. Just pop it next to you. Keep emptying your head throughout the whole day and watch yourself observe. Life will change color. Your day will change color. You'll come home and you'll be in bliss. There will be a level of serenity inside of your soul that once you've experienced it and done it for a day, you will never sacrifice it again for another moment. And then the beautiful thing about that is everything becomes possible. You can create as much money as you want, as much love as you want. You can have everything that you want. You really, really can. You can have any experience you choose, but it's coming from the point of choice rather than being inflicted upon you. And then finally, the last part of the Eastern philosophy's analysis, I guess, of the mind is pure intelligence. And that pure intelligence is where there is no past, present, or future, where there is no conversation, there is no need for talking, there is no need for back chat, there's no need for story, there's no need for any of that. There's just that pure place of nothingness. That's pure intelligence. That's the source of you. And when we touch that, we become creative. And it's that place that we create from. So if we're going to be creating anyway, let's create in favor of our greatest bliss and start to notice how many times do you hit bliss a day? How many times? Your life is meant to be about bliss. It's meant to be about great joy, great majesty. So hold on tight to the gift that you've been given of life and know that you can't know your life through your stories and your beliefs. You can only know your life by knowing yourself. Know yourself and you'll know life. You can't know yourself through all the chatter. You've got to get quiet. And it doesn't mean sitting in a room with your legs folded, because you still, most of the time, you still have a lot of chatter going on. It just means emptying your head for 2 to 5 seconds as oftentimes throughout the course of the day as you possibly can. So go ahead and give that a try. Feel like you've just been born. You've just fallen out of the sky just then. Just feel like that. Just feel like I've just fallen out of the sky. It's a chance to start again, a chance to do it all new again. I've just fallen out of the sky. I've landed here in this body on this planet, and I've got nothing to think about. There is no past and there's no present because you just fell out of the sky just then. Now, from the place of there, what would you do? Where would you go? What do you want to experience? Do you have to do the vacuuming? Great. Do the vacuuming. You have hands. You've got legs. Go on, do it. Is it time to do some ironing? Awesome. Oh, my God. Really look at the iron. Feel the heat of the iron. Like, get involved with living. No matter what you are doing, when you get involved with it from that platform of nothingness and no conversation, no story, no meaning, When you get involved with life, you taste life. You are living, you're experiencing it. And nothing is more exceptional than that experience. And that's what you're here for. You're all here to experience more of that and less of the pain and the suffering. Stop giving everything meaning. Stop creating stories for everything. Let everything that occurs in your life just be what it is without interference from you. How about that? So hopefully you've enjoyed today's show. It's a little bit of a rabbit hole moment. It certainly was. But hopefully you've enjoyed it and maybe just gotten a little bit of a snippet of something. Go to my Facebook page at allthews.facebook.com/Karen Smith. So go to that Facebook page and post your comments. And I'd be really keen to hear what you thought about today's show and any questions that you've got for me. I am going to put up an invitation for you guys to come and join me for 3 days in March 2016 on the Gold Coast, where we will go down the rabbit hole a little bit more. It's going to be a 3-day intensive. So keep your eyes out for that. So you can also post your comments at allthews.karenscouch.com. And I would love to hear from you. So come and hang out with me. I really look forward to next week and I really look forward to being able to share something really amazing with you. We've got a fabulous guest coming up. So get excited. Tell everybody that you know about Karen's Couch. Start spreading the word and I can't wait to spend more time with you. I'm going to see you on the ride. Big love coming your way. Bye, everybody.
This has been a production of TheWellnessCouch.com. Check us out on Facebook and join in the conversation on Facebook.com/TheWellnessCouch. Subscribe to each show on iTunes and check us out on Twitter. The Wellness Couch, streaming wellness into your lives.
Whilst the Wellness Couch presenters endeavor to provide accurate and helpful information to their listeners, these podcasts cannot take into account individual circumstances and are not intended to be a substitute for health and medical advice from a qualified health professional. You should always seek the advice of a qualified health professional before acting on any of the information provided by any of the Wellness Couch podcasts.